Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours, the weekly podcast where I, Brent Thomas, read my novel, Deadly Troubadours. Let's begin, shall we?
Chapter 10, Talbert Gretchen, Origins 2. Talbert did not know quite what to make of his new division. When Instructor Hill had told him he would be entering an advanced section of the academy, he'd expected clandestine secrecy, a cabalistic brotherhood, and the strict safeguarding of secrets, especially since it had the nondescript restriction of the study. Perhaps there was an unknown section of the school that was reserved for their use, and that had a hidden entrance that was opened by choosing the correct combination of manuscripts in the library. He had not expected it to be a middle floor in the north wing of the science building. Studies were hardly shrouded in mystery. In fact, most students were quite open about their pursuits, and several were eager to both offer and receive advice and suggestions. As far as he could tell, the most unusual aspect of his new surroundings was that he had not chosen a project. In addition to taking classes, which were hailed as being more challenging than the normal academy courses, each student in the study was expected to develop and pursue several individual interests, one of which would develop into their project. This project was not to be a mere recitation or codification of existing knowledge, but it was to result in a breakthrough of knowledge. In short, at the age of 13, Talbert Gretchen was told that he had 5 years to make a lasting and generous contribution to the knowledge of the world in a field of his choosing with only one condition. He was not to directly advance weaponry. Weapons had more than enough developers, he was told. It would be fair to say that he found choosing a project to be a daunting task. What made it all the more daunting was that the other students had already decided on and made progress in their own projects. That these students had all been in the study for at least 6 months and Talbert had not yet reached his sixth day did not lessen his anxiety over trailing behind the others. He had gone from feeling as if he were leading his class to knowing that he was straggling behind, and he was not quite sure how to catch up. The main problem was not a lack of interests, but an overabundance of them. How could he sift through all the fields that made his mind race and choose one single topic to focus on? The other students had managed, and their ideas ranged from the inspired to the ridiculous to the macabre. One student, the blonde boy named Grayson, who had shown Talbert to his new quarters, was working on an alchemical method of transferring heat through a length of wire. His ultimate goal was to have a series of linked lights globes that could be lit and darkened by the igniting and extinguishing of a primary globe. So far, after 2 years of work, he had managed to link 3 lights with a 5-foot length of cord between them. His goal was 20 lights, with 50-foot separations. Another student, Mary, was inspired by tales of golems and was attempting to create a modern homunculus. After several failures with clay, she was said to be now experimenting with rodents. Apparently, she had extensive traps laid throughout the academy. Fortunately, she was restricted from exploring any of the practical aspects of her project outside of her reserved laboratory. When the Academy did not mind delving into the gray areas of morality, it did feel there were needs for certain limitations. Mary did protest that some of these limitations, such as being forbidden from harvesting materials from the local graveyards, were slowing down her progress. Even though he found such a pursuit rather silly, Talbert was in no position to judge, as he had not yet decided on a project or even narrowed it down to a field. And so, for the sixth night in a row, he found himself sitting at a side table in the study's common library with several stacks of books towering to eye level. He was certain that if he read the right passage in the right book, then inspiration would hit, and he would know what his project should be, and perhaps even how to best go about accomplishing it. Unfortunately, he had no idea in which tome that precious inspiration was hidden, and so he was going to have to read them all until he discovered it. Next to him was a thread-bound notebook that he had fashioned from discarded papers. On it he had jotted down the few scant ideas that had so far come to him. Most were followed by scribbled marks indicating either the idea's simplicity or his actual lack of interest. What was the point of an impressive project if he had little inclination to see it through? He sighed and turned to the final page of his current tome. Despite an interest in discussions of the anatomical properties of gargantuan flighted reptiles, the likelihood of stumbling upon such a beast was quite low, and therefore it would be rather foolish to start a project in such a field. Instructor Hill himself had dissuaded Talbert from such a topic. "Look at me," the instructor had said. "I know more about dragons than any man alive. I used to dine with kings and instruct the finest dragon slayers in the land. Now, the dragons are dead, the kings have forgotten me, the slayers are little more than drunks, and I dine with students. Find something the world deems profitable." Talbert closed his eyes and rubbed his brow. Maybe the answer would be in the next book. "You shouldn't worry so much." The voice, despite being as fresh and feminine as it was, startled him, and he jerked at the sound. In response, he managed to make a sound that resembled nothing so much as blah. "Sorry, I guess I snuck up on you, but seriously, don't get so hung up on this. No one expects you to declare a project your first week, certainly not Instructor Hill. I'm not searching for him, I'm searching for myself." He reached out for the next book as he looked up at the source of the distraction. Yet again she startled him. She was tall for a boy, much less a girl, and had the same broad, strong shoulders of the women he knew back in the islands, who made their livelihoods from paddling down rivers, either fishing or serving as guides. She must be a year or two older than him. Her clothes were simple cotton, nothing fancy, just trousers and a simple blouse covered by a simple leather vest. He did his best to keep from directly looking, but could not helped to notice that she had curves that more than equaled the broadness of her shoulders, and he tried to dismiss the image of her and the next to nothing that some of the canoe women wore. Despite the alluring qualities of her body, it was her face that most grabbed his attention. Her skin was clear and smooth, and several shades lighter than his own. Her complexion seemed neither pale nor tan, and was full of the glow of health so particular in that age. Her nose was pert and slightly upturned, complementing the small chin that almost seemed to point down. The center of her chin was dotted by a tiny freckle. She had crystal blue eyes that almost seemed to glow. Thick eyebrows the color of honey sat just above those icy embers. The stretch of forehead was crested with tresses that shared the same honey color, and they spilled down her back and peaked out, leveling off at her elbows. Her features combined to suggest a member of a royal house of some fantastic race that was written about in the mythic histories. Talbert noticed that his hand was still searching for a book, and he wondered how long he had been groping the empty air. He broke away from the siren pull of her eyes, gave a small frown, and finally managed to retrieve the next book. "I'm sorry, I just had a thought about..." He examined the title of the book. "The Use of Fungus to Curb the Spread of Intimate Afflictions." He felt his face flush and wondered if she would notice. "As interesting as that sounds, have you noticed that you're the only one here tonight?" He looked around. He had not noticed, but he did see that her observation was not quite accurate. "You're here?" "Yes, but that's different. I was here on a task for Instructor Klein, and I do not intend to remain here. By all appearances, you do." He looked over his books, shrugged, and lightly tossed his fingers upward. "So it would seem. Have you forgotten what night it is?" All he could do was look at her blankly. He fought the urge to allow his eyes to drift down to her chest. "It's Foundation Night." Another blank look. "Don't tell me this is your first Foundation Night. That is adorable." She smiled with her mouth open. That might have been the moment she captured Talbert's young heart. The first young woman to do so. "You're coming with me." She grabbed his hand and pulled him from the stacks of books. He was powerless to resist. Had he ever been so aware of his own hand before? Of what it was he was holding? He could feel the smoothness of her palm and the slenderness of her fingers as she led him down hallways and up twisting and turning stairs. Her hands were soft and lacked calluses of any form and had a confident strength about them. He wondered if she played sports, if she liked books, what her family was like. He then recalled that something crucial was lacking. "Wait, stop!" They were still climbing stairs. He had never been in this section of the school, at least not as he recognized, but Talbert was lost not only geographically. How could he ask the question without it sounding odd? She was leading the way and looked down at him from the higher stairs. Her height was compounded by the steps, and he felt she must tower over him. couldn't imagine how they must look together. She was some fairy princess made real. She practically floated. He felt short. Her hair shimmered and glowed in the torchlight. He was sure his must look like unkempt sheep's wool. She was still smiling that same open-mouthed smile that was engaging, inviting, and full of mirth. He could barely stammer out what had been the most important question imaginable to him. So I don't know your name. She closed her mouth and came a step down closer to him. She was over a foot away, but he swore he could feel the warmth coming off of her, just as he knew there was a scent of sandalwood in the air. The smile might have faded, but it tugged at the corners of her mouth and still danced in her blue, blue eyes. "Do you make a habit of running away with girls whose names you don't know? I didn't imagine that was the kind of boy you are." The moment hung heavy between them. Talbot felt there was something he was supposed to be doing, but could not figure out what it was. He knew there were several things that he wanted to do, and that his body told him he should be doing, even as his mind told him to resist. There was a deep tolling of a bell. It echoed through the stairwell. The vibrations of it came up through the floor. The pealing and the shaking must have broken the spell of whatever had held them there for those few moments, as she immediately began climbing up the stairs at an even faster pace. "Hurry up, we're going to miss it." She was no longer leading him by the hand, and his palm felt cold and lonely. They burst through a door and were on the roof. They could see the courtyard and grounds below. Students and even teachers were spread out on blankets. There was a hush in the air. Talbot could feel the anticipation and wondered what could be coming. It started with a single streak of light. A lazy, green-glowing rocket ascended towards the heavens. Just as it could go no further, it began to creep back down. It erupted into showers of sparks. The crowd below roared in approval. Talbot began to scoff. They had fireworks back home that were far more impressive than a lone rocket. Even a single rocket left twice the impact if it was fired over the water. He began to tell the blue-eyed fairy princess about how fireworks looked better when they were also reflected on clear water. But before he could get the words out, the second, third, fourth, and fifth rockets took flight. Their eruptions had no sooner faded than the next half-dozen burst into the night air. It was a dazzling array of colors and shapes, patterns and visions. For the audience below, it was happening above as something separate from them. For the two of them on the roof, they were a part of it. The explosions were at eye level, and so close it seemed as if they could reach out and touch them. It was spectacular. Talbot had almost never seen anything as beautiful. They sat and watched the glory of colors playing out in front of them. Ideas flooded his mind, not only about what was in front of him, but also who was beside him. During one of the occasional lulls, the fairy princess leaned over to him. "I'm Daniela." The smile was back. "Daniela," he repeated, testing the name out. He liked saying it. "Aren't you going to tell me your name?" "You mean you make a habit of running away with boys whose names you don't know? I didn't imagine that was the kind of girl you are." "Of course I know your name. Everyone knows the name of a new member of the study." She punctuated this by swaying and giving him a gentle bump with her shoulders. Even sitting, she was a few inches taller than him, and he could feel the solidness of her. "Introducing yourself is still the polite thing to do." "Then by all means, let's be proper." He tried to match her playful tone. "I am Talbot Gretchen. Pleased to meet you, Talbot Gretchen." "Pleased to meet you, Daniela." "Daniela D'Avador." "Pleased to meet you, Daniela D'Avador." Their eyes met. For a moment, everything was still. He could not take his eyes off of her. He was aware of the tiny motions of her eyes, her lips, her mouth. Was it a signal? Did she want him to? Was she waiting? The crack of fireworks pulled their attention back to the sky. He was disappointed and relieved. It was such a nice moment, and he didn't want to ruin it by being stupid. A warm hand slid along his arm and entwined with his. There came the soft pressure of her shoulder nestling against his. He could smell sandalwood. The fireworks continued.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Deadly Troubadours is now available as an ebook from Smashwords.com, Amazon.com, and Apple's online store. If you want to know more about me, Brent Thomas, you can visit my website at deadlytroubadour.com. You can also like me on Facebook by searching for the page Deadly Troubadours. This podcast is available on iTunes, so if you have a moment, please rate and review the show. While you are there, why not check out my other podcasts, Comics League International and Living Japan. If you want to contact me, email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter at deadtroubadour. Once again, thanks for listening. If you are enjoying the book, please share it with your friends. And please tune in next week for the continuing adventures of the Deadly Troubadours.